And now, the Sandhills' number one morning show, Mornings with the Leader Man, here on Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB, and heard and seen around the world at talk973.com.
The best part of waking up is waking up with us.
Catching up in a neon light. Didn't know till we walked in, it was karaoke night. She was in a circle of girls chasing a shot with a line. She was laughing, they were daring her to get on the mic. One of them walked up and turned in her name. Next thing I knew, man, she was up on the stage singing, "Heads, Carolina, tails, California." Maybe she'd fall for a boy from South Georgia. She's got the bar in the palm of her hand, and she's a 90s country fan like I am. Hey, I got a Chevy, she can flip a quarter. I'd drive her anywhere from here to California when this song is over. I gotta find her, cause she had me at Heads, Carolina.
Good morning, Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. Welcome back to Mornings with the Leader Man. My name is Brad LaDronca, filling in for Steve, the Leader Man, this morning. Alongside me is Moore County's one and only Mr. Stephen Woodward. Good morning again, Stephen.
Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Leader Man. Good morning, everybody, on this momentous Monday right here in the Sand Hills. Election Day countdown is underway.
Weather for us today here in the Sand Hills, you're looking at a high of 71 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Lows this evening dipping down to 58 degrees. No chances of rain really in the forecast for the next couple days. That does bump up here midweek for Wednesday and Thursday. So looking right now like it's going to be a clear day for us to get out there and vote tomorrow. Currently, it is 55 degrees outside, with winds coming out of the north-northeast at 10 miles per hour. All right, Stephen, let's get right on into it because we have a very special guest with us on the phone. Why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest?
I will certainly do that. I would like to add that there will be some rain on Election Day. We're going to be raining down on the Democrats' parade at voting locations all over the county and across the state and across this great land of ours. Make sure you get out to vote and take for granted that everyone in your sphere of influence has already voted or is planning to do so. Make sure that you are a force multiplier to make sure that every last eligible voter votes. We prefer eligible voters here on this side of the aisle. I'm really pleased to introduce this morning a guest joining us by phone, Rear Admiral retired Chuck Kubik, U.S. Navy. This is a man who has served his country with great distinction over the course of more than three decades, and he also has been in the room with Donald Trump as a national security policy advisor, all the way back to the very beginning of the Trump campaign in 2016. He has been on the ground with his private engineering company, actually directing the building of the wall at the U.S.-Mexico border. He is a lifelong supporter of Boy Scouts. He is a decorated Eagle Scout, and that is quite a bio. Good morning, Admiral Kubik. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Stephen. Great to be with you.
Well, we've been talking about Donald Trump now for about 9 years. The left likes to pretend that he was never president, but he actually was the president of the United States for four of those years. You were in his orbit very early on back in 2016. From your perspective as one who has served our country, worn the uniform, tell us give us your overall assessment of Donald Trump, the man, and why he is this unique force at this time in our history?
Well, I think it can go back to his initial selection of advisors. I was one of the, I think, the first Navy flag officer to endorse him. He asked me to be a part of his national security policy team. And when he was picking that team, he was looking for people who were predisposed to action. He had a good understanding of what his policies would be, and much different than other candidates who basically spend a lot of time formulating policy. I know I was also in the Reagan White House as a White House fellow, and we had a very active policy-producing process. Donald Trump was a little different. He knew what policies he wanted to enact. He knew the need for such policies, and he was looking for people of action. That frustrated a lot of people who wanted to get in the game and debate and talk, but those who were predisposed to action got a lot of things done. And I think you can see that right now as he runs for the third time. His policies are action-oriented, mm-hmm. whereas if you look at his opponent, it's hard to find out anything other than just words that talk about niceties and try to ignore the disaster that their policies have created, with the idea that they promise to do better, I guess, or to fix things. And whereas Donald Trump is coming in, he knows what he wants to do. We know what he's going to do. He's not going to be a dictator. He was never a dictator. But he is a guy who wants people who can get things done. And I think that's what our country needs at this point in time. We need to move forward and not spend a lot of time talking. We need to get to work and fix all the things that have been broken in the last 4 years.
Now we fast forward to 2024, and you are part of an organization called Veterans for America First, and one of the endeavors of this organization has been the production of documentary films. Tell us a little bit about the current documentary, which came out really just in the last couple of months, a call to action documentary. What's the goal of that one?
It's about 1 hour long. I play a role in it, and it's talking about the call to action of veterans across our nation to step up and be the voice in their community. It talks about the issues that are before us and ask veterans to be key persons even today and tomorrow in getting out the vote, protecting the vote, volunteering to be poll watchers, poll workers, and it basically talks about the need to speak up, to get engaged, and to work for America. We know that Trump is going to take care of veterans. This documentary basically says it's time for veterans to step forward, be the voice in the community, and take care of getting Trump reelected. One of the points that's made is that veterans aren't bashful. They will stand up in their community. They will speak out. And when they stand up as a single voice, pretty soon a brother or sister veteran will be at their side. And those two will speak out, and they'll become 10. And 10 will become 100. 100 will become 1,000. 1,000 will become 10,000. And that's what we're counting on. A lot of folks didn't realize we had a grassroots veteran organization in 2016 that surprised the opposition with the number of veterans that turned out to support Trump in 2016. We're expecting even a bigger, veteran play here in 2024. And that's what it's all about. And it talks, it's veterans, it's average Americans, it's men, it's women, all speaking, their thoughts on what needs to be done moving forward, and the role that active voices from veterans can play in getting things fixed in America.
And if folks want to take a look at that documentary and maybe get some of their friends and neighbors fired up ahead of Election Day tomorrow, they can go to VFAS.us. Is that correct?
Yes, that's VFAF, Veterans for America First.us, and it can be downloaded right there. There's about a 3-minute trailer, and then the documentary runs for about an hour.
Excellent. I encourage everybody to take a look at that. Now, let's talk about another area where you have been deeply involved with a very high-profile legacy of the Trump presidency. That would be the U.S.-Mexico southern border wall. Of course, you know, Donald Trump was mocked when he came onto the political scene to run for president and said he was going to build a great big beautiful wall to secure our homeland once and for all. You got involved in that from the private sector as the operator of an engineering company. Tell us that story and about the wall that you actually saw go up for a number of years.
Well, sure. Yeah, my company is Cubic Engineer Group here in Virginia Beach, and we partnered with a family-owned construction company out of Galveston, Texas. And we were one of several companies that were bidding border wall. Now, under Trump, all of the projects that came out were competitively awarded, you know, with you know, firm fixed price you know, bids. And we won you know, contracts in all four states: California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. The first places that we started to work were was right there at the Pacific Ocean in San Diego, Tijuana border. And we built the wall from there into the mountains, about 15 miles. A lot of folks, you know, kind of mocked it, saying, well, we were building an 18-foot wall, and they would get a 19-foot ladder. Well, that was only the first barrier. After that, we had about 150 feet of a free zone that was covered by cameras, sensors, lights. And then there's a 30-foot wall. So it's a double wall. When we finished that, the Border Patrol told us that they were able to relocate 126 agents because of the effectiveness of that wall. In fact, we were honored. President Trump came down personally and autographed a section of the wall that we were building. But what happened to us is we ultimately had about 167 miles under contract. There were three other contractors, our competitors, that were actually working, and we all had a collective goal of building 450 miles by the end of the first Trump term. We ended up getting, our share was about 140. We did 145. But as soon as Biden came in, you know, the day he took office, he shut us all down. And so we never got the last parts of our contracts, you know, completed. And even till this day, we're still fighting through the courts to get paid for that work. And it's a total travesty, but our team is ready, and we can start work very quickly. You know, once Trump gets in power and starts to redirect funding back towards finishing the wall, we only need about 700 miles of the 2,000-mile border to effectively shut it down, and there's already 450 miles built. So the job is pretty close to being done and can be finished very quickly. But it wasn't easy. We're talking about huge mountains, 65% grades, and security. We had to have armed security guards. We even had situations where we were fired upon and our guards were in a firefight with the cartels. They didn't like a darn thing about what we were doing, stopping their business.
And of course, I think one of the great mysteries of all of this is the idea that there are those who oppose the construction of this wall. But the bottom line is it's very effective. I mean, if we had 700 miles of wall, we could really control the southern border and put an end to this humanitarian crisis. I think that's pretty clear, isn't it?
Absolutely. And even if you do have folks, I mean, they would still try to cut through the wall. It was hard to tunnel under because we had 6 feet of concrete in the ground that they would have to get under. But what it does with the cameras and all the security and that technology, it basically slows them down. It allows the Border Patrol to focus their resources where there are threats. What was happening after the wall was shut down and even before it was completed in sections is that the cartels would basically mass people on one side of the border. Normally at night, they would then bring them across the river, particularly down in Texas. And it was basically making a big hardship on the Border Patrol because, let's say, they have a shift change at midnight. You know, agents were having to stay over. Other agents were having to come in early. And when they start to deal with these hundreds and thousands of people crossing, it takes all their manpower away from other points on the border where then they bring the drugs across. And so it even got to the point where the Border Patrol was faced with a cartel running a boutique travel agency. The cartel would actually call them and say, we're going to come to this point at midnight and we're going to have 100 people cross. You just need to be ready to process them. And it was surreal. But when you saw these people come across, particularly the children, they were traumatized. It was unbelievable. They were all, teenagers in the range of 14 to 15, the kids, girls as young as 12 years old. And in my limited Spanish, I would talk to these folks as they came across and find out that they didn't know where their parents were. The girls were barely able to speak, even to tell their age. I think if the average American saw, what happened after Trump's wall was stopped and what's been happening the last 4 years, they would be sick to their stomach of the trauma that the current administration has forced upon, the children that are being trafficked across the border.
It is devastating. And, of course, the other consequence of it is that the criminals who have come into our communities across the country, murdering innocent people, driving under the influence, committing all manner of crimes, both petty and violent, never seems to end. And it's almost like it's become normalized. Anybody who has not done so, I would suggest a documentary by the great independent journalist James O'Keefe. It's called Line in the Sand. It is live reporting from the border. It is available on the Tucker Carlson Network digitally. And that would drive home some of the things that Admiral Kubik has been talking about. Sir,
Our website, we also have our second documentary. It was put out maybe 6 months ago called Border Invasion. It can be downloaded off of the same website, and it goes into detail. I have a small role in that, but there's a lot of reporting by the Border Patrol themselves and former agents, and it really does talk about the violence that has happened, since the building of the wall has stopped.
And that is at VF, as in four, A as in America, S, VAFAS, right? Is that right?
So VAF, Victor Foxtrot Alpha Foxtrot dot Uniform Sierra.
Okay, that's the website, and that's probably the best way to communicate it with all those letters. Now, before we let you go, I just wanted to touch on a broader topic, which is, there's a sense, if you talk to retired military, of course, we have many of them in our community here with our proximity to Fort Bragg. Many of them are retiring with a great sense of regret, I guess, as to what has become of the of our U.S. military at the senior level, at the management level. Is this something that we can recover from? I mean, can we restore the strength and the effectiveness of our military or going forward, in your opinion?
I think we can. We still have a cadre of mid-grade to senior enlisted and officers who understand that the type of leadership that they're receiving is wrong. A lot of them are leaving early. Many are staying. And my own son was an example. I was a Navy CB. I was in command of the Navy CBs. I had 16,000 troops in my division. He was actually one of my troops at one point. But as he became senior and was looking towards staying on or retiring, he came to me one day and he said, Dad, he said, I spend half my day keeping all the crap that's coming down from the top away from my troops so we can get some work done. And so I think that there's a great capability still within the force, but at the very top, we need to, clean house, particularly with the very, very senior people. But there are a few, particularly those that are out in the Pacific, who I'm very familiar with, who are strong leaders and ready to take charge. They just need the burden of the civilian leadership removed from them right now, and they will rebound. But we also have a big bill to pay in terms of equipment, in terms of training, in terms of manpower. So this will be a bit of a struggle, but the capability is still there. And in the retired community, those that are frustrated, I again recommend speak out, because we don't need to tolerate leaders that are more focused on social cultural issues as opposed to training to, you know, win battles and defeat enemies.
Very well put. And let us hope that after Tuesday, or certainly before the end of the week, when we have clarity on the outcome of this consequential election, that we can get to work on doing just that and restoring our great military. Admiral, I thank you very much for joining us this morning. This has been a really enlightening conversation. Thank you for your service, of course, and we look forward to speaking with you again down the road and learning more about ongoing projects by Veterans for America First. So thank you again, sir, and have a great day.
Well, thank you, and veterans, tomorrow's the day. Don't hang around the house. Get out there. Make sure people are voting. Stand tall. This is a call to action, and you have the duty to make sure we get out the vote and protect the vote. Thanks a lot, Stephen. Enjoyed the show.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, there we have it.
All right. Well, you know, that's that. This is an offshoot, I guess you would say, of why it's great to live in a community like this in Southern Moore County, Pinehurst, where we have so many interesting people coming through here. And I happened to engage a gentleman in conversation several weekends ago when the Golf Heritage Society was in town. And we got to talking about the election, and he mentioned Admiral Kubik as being a friend and contact of his. And he gave me his contact information. And here we've just had a very inspired conversation with certainly a man who has served his country with distinction and as a veteran continues to make a difference, make a big difference. So that was great.
Yeah,
feel good.
That was very, very interesting interview conversation. And, you know, as a reminder, if you didn't catch all of it, if you maybe joined us late partway through it, we do put up every single one of the interviews that we have done here over the last handful of weeks. If you want to go back, revisit, listen to any of them again, go to our website, weeb990.com. On the left-hand side, click podcast, and you can go back in and listen to any and all of the interviews that we did, like interviewing Congressman Richard Hudson on Friday, our friend William from Skaters for More talking about the barbecue chicken wing cook-off thing that they did over the weekend and the fundraising efforts that they need for the skate park here in Moore County. So
did we get the headline on who won the chicken wing contest?
I kind of figured I needed to give it a day or two and reach out to them to see how it turned out, but I definitely am going to find out some information on that.
I think
well.
That would be good to know for, you know, those of us who are connoisseurs of the chicken wing.
Yeah.
And very important.
Before time gets away from us, I do want to go over one thing, as I do every Monday, which is your local high school football scores. 9-1 Pinecrest beat 6-4 Union Pines on Friday. Ooh. 57-7.
Oh, that's a kind of a big rivalry.
Yeah, it's a big rivalry. An absolute shellacking, so to speak, of there. And then 5-5 North Moore. Beat 1-9 Chatham Central 49-0. Now, my wife attended Chatham Central. That school's just never been good at any kind of athletics, unfortunately. It's a small school. It's a small
right,
school.
Now
so
now we're gonna have to get security in the parking lot again.
Nah, my wife's not listening, so that's a good thing. She's busy working. Football playoffs start 2 weeks, November the 15th. Seeding and stuff like that will be announced next week, Monday. So just keep an eye out on that. If you've got any kind of kids in school or your football programs, want to support your alma mater, there you go on that. We've got about 3 minutes
we've
or so left.
We've got sunshine on a cloudy day. What do you got?
Well, I want to play this. It's a little bit of a longer clip, so I'm going to try to fit it in. But it's Ron DeSantis on Mark Levin's show on Saturday, kind of giving his assessment of Kamala Harris.
The governor
of Florida. Well, Mark, when they airdropped her in, you know, I told people, we who follow this, we knew she wasn't up to the job. We knew she was a vapid San Francisco leftist with a horrible record, but I caution people that the media would give her hundreds of millions of dollars worth of fawning press, and that she'd probably raise $1 billion and run ads to try to gaslight people into trying to convince them that she's something that she's not. Now, I think as she's had to give interviews, I think people have seen through this, and I think they realize that, one, she's way too liberal to be president of the United States. I mean, she was the most liberal senator when she was in the U.S. Senate. She was a San Francisco Democrat as both a district attorney and attorney general of California. And then even when she ran for president, she ran to the left of Bernie Sanders. But you also have the other issue of, could this be somebody that could be a leader, that could be commander in chief, that you'd have confidence in? And the answer to that is no. And I actually had a little dust up with her recently over these hurricanes, because we had a major hurricane come through, Hurricane Helene. And in the state of Florida, we take these very seriously. We do all hands on deck. It's very taxing. People work very hard from me on down, but we respond. And then we had another one come. And so we're spinning up, getting ready for that. And then I start reading in the media, Harris is mad that the governor hasn't called her. And then she was asked about it, and she said, I was being selfish and irresponsible by not calling her. My job was to protect the lives of the people of Florida and to protect the property and to make sure we have a swift response, not to worry about catering to her and her political campaign. And I have dealt with storms in this administration. She has never once called. She's never offered any support. She's never come to Florida to help people. It was only because she was taking heat because of the Helene response that when Milton was brewing, she tried to inject herself in. But what that showed me is, yes, I disagree with her on the issues, just as you do, but this is just not somebody that could be commander in chief.
I think Ron says it completely accurately. Just kind of, she just can't lead us. You can see it. She's just trying to sling from the hip here. I'm ready for tomorrow. I hope you get out and vote. I hope that each and every one of you brings a friend, a neighbor, a loved one, whether it be a spouse, a parent, a child. We need each and every vote to count. Every vote matters. I don't care what anybody says. We can't look at the polling right now. We can't look at voter turnout to figure out who's winning. The only way to do it is to get out there and vote. Vote tomorrow. Any last words, Steve?
Yes. Dan Bishop for Attorney General. Hal Weatherman for Lieutenant Governor. Mark Robinson for Governor. And on down the ballot. Vote both sides of the ballot, folks.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of Mornings with the Leader Man. From everybody here at WEEB, we thank you for tuning in to us. And as a reminder, go out there, visit each and every one of the advertisers that you hear on this station. They are the lifeblood of this economy, and every dollar you spend with them stays right here in Moore County. Until tomorrow morning, thank you, and we will see you then.
Come back. You'd better be laughing.
So, what have we learned? Heck, I don't know. But this is one crazy show. Bye now.
Cut! Cut! That's it. Go home, everybody. None of this ever happened.
Well, y'all come back now, you hear?
I think we're through here.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much, man. That's pretty much all I got, man.
Okay. Class dismissed. Rock on!
Well, let me tell you something. Everything comes to an end.
Broadcasting from the top of the North Carolina Sandhills, 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM, WEEB, Southern Pines, Pinehurst,